Thank you, my dear. Okay, you got about 30 seconds to get settled. Or we'll start without you. It is 10 o'clock. Hi, Don. In this area of the world. Now, if you're in California, what is it, 7 o'clock, Paula?
7 o'clock. Yeah, 7 o'clock.
Wow.
Well,
that's what
I'm just waking up.
Say.
I'm just waking up then.
You know, I am an early riser. I'm not saying I'm always pulled together, obviously, I'm not, but I am an early riser. I meditate early and journal early, and that's my discipline.
Very good.
Okay. I think we're all here. I'm going to put you on mute. If you need to talk, just unmute yourself and let it fly. So, good morning. Let's just take a moment, as we do each Sunday morning, to get a sense of our connection with one another. However you sense that, if you're used to looking at pictures on your computer screen, just imagine what it's like to close your eyes for a minute and the pictures disappear, but the connection is still there. You can say this out loud or to yourself, or just take the energy in. The light of God surrounds us. The love of God enfolds us. The power of God protects us. And the presence of God watches over us. Wherever we are, God is. And all is well. I often wonder what it would be like if we remembered that during a day. So I'd like to begin by just asking ourselves the question or the observation. How would you you don't have to say anything out loud, this is more of a rhetorical question. How would you describe the essence of this gathering on Sunday morning? So, for instance, here we are as a group of spiritual beings who are on a similar path, asking similar questions, opening ourselves up to a similar kind or a similar sense of truth. Here we are as a group of individuals, seeming individuals, who are really one in nature, but also think sometimes that we are still separate from one another. And we tune in on Sunday mornings to reconnect, to get a deeper sense of truth. So interesting for me a lot of times is As I do this with you all, which I'm extremely grateful for, I lose touch with an individual sense of self. It's not Jerry Boylan doing something. So I wonder if that happens to all of you out there. I mean, I know you are taking whatever is happening in, whether I'm saying this or somebody else is. You're taking it in as an individual some ways. But there's also sort of a group energy, group consciousness, a oneness, sense of non-separation. Even when you ask a question, you kind of know you're not the only one asking that question. Mm-hmm. Or when you make a comment, you're not the only one making that comment. Sort of like when Paul shows up in the book and the guides say, well, Paul is saying this, or Paul is objecting to this, or Paul, you know, we realize that, you know, I had that same thought. Or that same thing was bothering me, but I was kind of too afraid to ask, okay? We began this morning in our discussion before the discussion. Jim was asking the question, and let me make sure I got this correctly. We were talking about growing up in a particular belief system. And did your parents ever ask you, what is it that you believe? Or did you fall into a niche somewhat like I did, was that I was taught what to believe. And I was also taught what I was taught to believe was also considered to be the truth. Mm. Nobody ever said everybody else is mistaken, but that was pretty much assumed, okay? And sometimes, you know, it was assumed they were just going to go to hell, which was really interesting, especially since they didn't do anything to deserve to get there, you know. So we were examining this, and then Margot chimed in with something that astounded me when I first heard it. She said, she grew up believing love, and that anything that is not of love. Now, our parents didn't tell her that, her church didn't tell her that, her minister didn't. That was her heart speaking, and she listened to it. Damn it! You know, we're handed that gift at some time or another, even in our childhood. And either we refused to listen, we didn't listen, we couldn't listen, or we were afraid to listen. Now, I'm not saying that's going to be true for everybody, but I'm wondering if not that gift of faith, that gift of unconditional love, might not have been offered to each one of us on some level of our consciousness. And we had the opportunity at that time, maybe to accept or embrace that, but did not, or could not, or would not. And so that puts us in kind of an interesting place this morning and other mornings when we gather here together or not, of saying to ourselves, well, what is the space that I am opening myself up here right now? Is I do believe that God is, I do believe that I am love. God, not only God is love, if I am from God, then I am love as well. And that anything that is not of love is not the truth. And if it's not the truth, then it's not who I am. It couldn't be who I am. Because nothing can change my I am-ness. Truth is the truth. So I'm just suggesting we take a minute to absorb that. And I hope you all got this last week. When I sent out the class reflection, part of that reflection was a fairly large excerpt from one of my favorite little spiritual handbooks called Emmanuel's Book, which is. And I refer to it quite often because most of the explanations in this book are quite simple, quite direct, and I also feel quite true. And are said in such a loving, gentle, yet powerful way that I keep coming back to them time and time and time again. It's not necessarily saying anything different than what the book says or what other spiritual books might have to say. But it says it in such a way that makes it, to me anyway, makes it kind of understandable. And I mean that intellectually, but I can wrap myself around it, or I can allow myself to be wrapped around it. So by the way, if anybody is online with us this morning and does not get our class reflections, please email me at jerryboy@twc.com, G-E-R-R-Y-B-O-Y at twc.com. Let me know. I'll put you on our list and I'll make sure you get them, okay? Make sure, because at the end of every session, we send a link to the recording, if you happen to miss it or you want to watch it over again. And the link is viable usually for about maybe a week or so. And then I have to get it off my cloud storage because they don't let me store a whole bunch of stuff there, which is just what it is. So you can download from there. You don't have to watch it live. You can download it from there if you want to. Along with that is a class reflection and also a copy of an audio version of the meditation that we usually do either at the middle or the end of our session. So if you want to make sure you get those, if you haven't been getting them, let me know. jerryboy@twc.com. Okay. So that puts us in a really interesting space for this morning. And I am on page 33, unless anybody has anything you want to throw in here before we get started. Well, we're already started before we get into the book material. I'm going to begin at the top of page 33, even though we might have covered a little bit of this last week. The book we are using for your reference is The Book of Mastery, which is the first book in the second trilogy of Paul Selig's work. And if you don't have a book, that's perfectly okay because we're reading it. When you decide who you are in truth, those aspects of the self that you have invested great importance in will come forward to deny your worth as a divine being. And they do this for one reason, to maintain their purview. The ego does not, when you start playing King of the Mountain with the ego and you relegate it to its primary place, which is at the bottom of the mountain rather than the top, it doesn't like that very much. That's just in its nature. Nothing wrong with that. And it is probably going to find various ways to rebel against that and to regain its place at the top of the mountain. And one of the ways it does that is by planting doubts and fears in your mind. Is this okay? If I were doing this 30 years ago, would it be okay? Would it even be okay with me if I was doing this 30 years ago? Or would I think I was a heretic? And all sorts of things that are, some which are obvious, some which are subtle. Again, we're not asked to throw away. We're just asked to say, do I choose fear? Or do I choose love and acceptance, peace, harmony, whatever? If your world before you is a reflection of who you say you are, there's a whole lesson in a nutshell. If the world before you and the world before you is a reflection of who you say you are. That's another way of saying that. The world before you, the world that I see, is a reflection of how I see myself. If your world before you is a reflection of who you say you are, and you have built great investment in an identity that will be seen by others in a certain way, you can imagine the uproar when you begin to reclaim the self as the divine self. Those aspects of you that would like to shake hands with the world based on a false claim of worthiness, I'm the best one here, or we can turn that around, I'm a lowlife. Nobody loves me, everybody hates me, I'll go out in the garden and eat worms. Whatever you have claimed for yourself as an identity, have an investment in claiming purview over all that you see. So suppose you were Donald Trump. And you realize that is not who I really am. That's just the name. That's a label. And it has a whole lot of baggage connected with it. Can you imagine the energy involved in dismantling that belief system? I mean, and I'm saying that in a very non-judgmental way. Can you consider the pain, the difficulty involved in dismantling that belief system and accepting myself as a divine being, not separate from anyone or anything else? God, I don't know about you, but I'm glad that's not my karma. And again, I'm not saying that in a judgmental way, because the whole other side is true. You need to pick up somebody like Gandhi or Mother Teresa. And you take a look at, there's no baggage there, okay? There's this very thin veil of humanness, right? That is a very slender disguise of this divine self that is shining through. And so Gandhi could say something so wonderful and saying, there's a lot of people spending a lot of money to keep me poor, and laugh about it and smile, with his two teeth sticking out. Okay. So he's sitting in front of his spinning wheel. Okay. Knowing I don't have to do this. I could get clothes. I could get an Armani suit if I wanted it. Okay. But see, this is part of the shtick that's important for me, because it's important for you to see me this way. If you saw me in a palace with really nice clothes on, none of this, we would not be able to make the break we are making from the British Empire. So I'm not denying the importance of this particular piece. So what you mistake is what I have not mistaken. I realize this is not who I am. Mm-hmm. What is your message, somebody? I said, I am the message. Jesus could have said the same thing. What's your message? I am the message. How about you? What are you doing here? Not just Sunday morning. What are you doing here? I'm the message. What's the message you're sending?
Hey, Jerry.
Yo, you mind using the mic?
No, I'm fine.
Thank you. There you go.
So I was just thinking about what you just said, about the whole dismantling. And I know there was no judgment there, and I didn't feel that, but I was just thinking of myself and evaluating and purging a belief that perhaps that I kept just by default, and how challenging that is as I'm doing it for myself, but how uncomfortable that makes folks around me who identified me as such and such. And so I could see in my ego mind would think like, well, you know what, it's just easier and comfortable for me just to go ahead and just remain like this. And just one last thing is just like, so I'm a junior, my dad was a senior. So it's actually for years I went by James as opposed to Jim. So maybe about 30 years ago, I decided, well, I'm gonna go by Jim. Now I say that because there's others, folks who knew me, when I was James, and they can't wrap their mouth around calling me Jim. Mm-hmm. You're Jim. You'll always be Jim to me. I'm James. well, this is what I go by. I don't care. You know, I'm always going to call you this. So, yeah.
For years, most people in 12-step recovery programs, and I was quite out there for a number of years. I worked for a local treatment center. I did lectures around town. I did a lot of educational kind of things. In fact, once a month, I would give a lecture to a whole bunch of people from AA and Al-Anon. So there was a lot going on. And at the time, initially, I was still a member of a Roman Catholic religious order called the Zavarian Brothers, taught at St. X High School for a number of years. And so everybody knew me as Brother Jerry. That was kind of my focal point, my identification. And what happened was after I left the Brothers, legally, I did all the churchy things and had the Pope sign the document to relieve me of my vows and all of the legal stuff that I had to go through. For years, probably a pretty long time, people were still calling me brother. I'll always know you as Brother Jerry. Well, you know, I would stop every once in a while and say, what's changed? You know, I am still the same person I was, whether I had that label or not. I wonder what other people are holding on to. Mm. And again, that's perfectly, I'm not making a judgment about them, but, you know, kind of reflecting on what Jim's saying is, you know, I'm not just holding on to this name. Right. I'm holding on to this particular vision of you, right, that I think is much truer than the vision you're projecting right now. Right. Because the vision you're projecting right now is making me extremely uncomfortable.
Right.
Right. So I'm going to go back to the one that makes me comfortable.
Right.
So if I continue to know you as Brother Jerry, then I don't have to make any changes of what's happening here. I'll still know you as a teacher who taught me something 5 years ago, and I will accept that as being the truth. But if you tell me what you believe now, that's going to make me extremely uncomfortable because I'm going to have to change. And I don't want to do that. Now, what we're being asked to do is, are you willing to do that with yourself? This is not changing somebody else's mind about who you are. Okay. Are you willing to change the labels you might be holding on to for yourself?
Jerry.
Yes.
It's hitting me right in my third eye. Because I am now going through this process here. I was a week.
Okay.
And I'm having trouble. And people still want to see me as a we.
We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and it makes perfect sense to give you an idea of what the question and comment was. When I'm in a relationship with someone and someone drops their physical form, first of all, I need to ask myself, am I still in a relationship with them? And of course I am. I'm not in the same kind of relationship that might have been if they had physical form, but still, the relationship still exists. Now, other people might look at me as being, it's funny, when Margo and I met, Margo was a widow with two grown children. And I never looked at Margo as being a widow. It just never kind of entered my consciousness. But sometimes I think what, you know, the we that you're referring to is probably part of our own grieving as well. Okay. Yes, other people might want to put me in that particular place. But I think it's my own heart that's doing some letting go as well of that, of the form of that relationship. Hi, guys. Let's see. Okay. Now, when you know who you are, above and beyond these things, and you no longer invest in them as who you truly are, the world before you begins to become malleable, flexible, changeable. It's not rigid. Because as we have told you, everything you see before you is a creation, a manifestation of consciousness. And it's continually changing. Whether you know it or not, your view of yourself is continually changing. You know, wouldn't it be interesting to wake up every morning and saying, I'm not who I was yesterday? We hardly ever do that. We hardly ever even think of those in those terms. And yet that's true. I'm not who I was yesterday. I'm not who I told myself I was yesterday. What would happen if whenever I woke up in the morning that all of the labels that I had yesterday just sort of fell off and had to start over again? Wouldn't that be an interesting place to be in? I'd have to find out what bumper stickers am I going to stick on myself today? So you know, I wake up, well, it's Sunday morning. I better put on my teacher bumper sticker. I'm teaching out of the book of Matthew. Well, you know, that never even dawned on me, which is so beautiful because you're part of that as well. So when I show up on Sunday morning, there's no labels. I just happen to be in front of the room. The way Ram Dass put it so wonderfully, he said, you know, we're all just playing a game. And the game is that I know and you don't. Okay. And we're just sort of pretending that for the time being. It's not true. But okay, we're going to listen to Jerry for 45 minutes or an hour whenever he decides to shut up. Okay, we're going to listen to Jerry for a while. And we're going to pretend that he's got something to tell us that we don't know. Isn't that interesting? Now, suppose I came in here and said, I know and you don't. I'm kind of wondering how many people would show up. Could be. Well, maybe a whole bunch of people who want me to tell them who they are. Again, as he said so one time, he said, you know, we grow up and we go into, again, this is kind of a reflection of where we are right now. As soon as you start growing up, you go into what he calls people training. People start telling you who you are. The biggest difficulty with that is that all the people who are telling you who you are, they don't know who they are. Okay. But we're taking that in as being the truth. Because where do you go? Your parents and your church and your school are telling you this about you. Well, who do you begin to consult to find out whether that's true or not? Now, there are people like Margot who go to their own heart to get the answer to that. And most of us, I have to certainly include myself in that particular category, was either I was unwilling, I couldn't, or I wouldn't go there for verification because I didn't know whether I could accept that as being the truth.
Or all of the above.
And again, I might say it was a lot easier to have someone kind of put a belief system on me than it was creating one out of my own truth. Because, you know, let's suppose we were like Margot and we decided God is love and anything that is not of love is not of God, and that's what I'm going to believe in. And that's how I'm going to let this whole world unfold and my whole vision of the world to begin to unfold. That doesn't deny the pain of that. That doesn't deny the truth that a lot of people are going to reject me because of that. A lot of people are going to judge me because of that. A lot of people are going to put me in separation because of that. It's going to be really, really difficult some days to hold on to that as being the truth, because when I look at you and you're annoying me or you're bothering me or you're judging me or you're condemning me, you're putting me, it's going to be really, really difficult sometimes for me to accept you as being that divine being just like me. Sometimes compassion hurts, at least on an emotional, on a human, on a separate level. So we're not denying that. We're not saying, oh, Margot made that decision and everything was coming up roses. It's kind of like, you know, Uncle Remus in the song in the South, all the butterflies are flying and the birds are chirping, you know, zippity doo-dah, which is a whole other story all by itself. Okay.
I love that movie. So dear to my heart.
Thank you, Paul.
Oh my God.
I'm please, Paul, believe me. I'm not denying that piece, but it's not true all the time. I'll tell you what, you know, they said this is really an interesting story, so I'll just make this a little aside. Uncle Remus was a character created by a young man by the name of Joel Chandler Harris, who is a young college-educated white man, right, who created this image of an old black man so he could tell stories that were fables. Because an old black man was going to be listened to a lot better than a young white man. Isn't that interesting? So here's Uncle Remus singing Zippity Doo-Dah. And please don't deny that. If Zippity Doo-Dah shows up in your life, enjoy the hell out of it.
Oh, it did show up in my life.
But realize it's probably not going to be there all the time.
No, it's not.
And just because it's not there all the time doesn't mean there's something wrong with you.
Oh, good. I come here for validation. Thank you, Jerry.
You're right, Paul. You're welcome. I'm not even quite sure what you're thanking me for, but that's okay.
Jerry?
Yes.
Jerry, can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm having trouble with my website. Everybody's cutting in and out. I'm wondering if anyone else is having that problem.
A couple of people might be. Sometimes that happens. I don't think it's happening on this end, but it might be. But I haven't noticed that with a whole bunch of people. Okay.
I had trouble hearing what Margot said that astounded you so much, Jerry.
Well, Margot is kind of at the other side of the room, so that was a little bit difficult.
No, what you said about Margot, what she said that was astounding to you, that's when you cut out for me.
Oh, you didn't hear that whole piece?
I think I missed it, yeah.
Okay. What we were reflecting on was this. What we were reflecting on is this, that we are creatures who are expressions of our own belief system. And as it said in the reading that I read a couple of paragraphs ago, if I can find it here. Your world before you is a reflection of who you say you are. We talked about that again last week. Now, most of us grew in a belief system, no matter what the religious beliefs might have been. Most of us grew up in a belief system that said, this is what you believe and this is the truth. And we were told that. And most of us accepted that on face value, because either we were afraid or couldn't or wouldn't accept it any other way. Margot expressed this to me years and years ago, and I was always kind of amazed at it, that she grew up with the belief, not that the church was right, not that the school was right, not that her parents were right, but that God is love. That's the essence of my being. And that anything that is not of love is not of God. That's how I'm living my life. That's how I'm living my awareness. And I can recall, I mentioned this to the group a little bit earlier, I can recall talking to a therapist, a friend of mine, about that. And he said, yep. You know, he said, there are a few people who have that perception and are, in a sense, almost born with that perception. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But most of us, I certainly consider myself to be part of this, most of us have to struggle like hell to be able to get to that place. We have to let go of a lot of stuff, a lot of old ideas, a lot of old beliefs, a lot of old systems of connectedness, right? in order to be able to warm up or get to that particular truth.
Wow, I'm glad I asked you to repeat that, because that is a that's great. I'm glad I heard that. Thank you.
I'm glad I heard it too.
Jerry.
Yes.
Something that's really helped me that I heard in this class, you said, listen to the baby in your lap.
Yeah.
And that babies don't know a whole lot. They're kind of, you know, they're untrained. And yes. that helps me if to get
they,
through.
They haven't right. drunk the Kool-Aid yet. Okay.
That is correct.
They've Are, the parents have started training them, okay, but they haven't taken it in yet, right? Because I'm still pooping in my pants. I'm still throwing up whenever I want to. Right? I'm still doing whatever it is that I need to do. And you know, I'm glad you're taking care of me, but you know. And then of course, you know, if I'm Freudian, I become anal retentive, you know, and I do this and I do that. And okay. Well, we begin to realize on this particular stage, and this is probably another way of describing our situation here on planet Earth and our situation here in Unity on Sunday morning, is I begin to realize that I was going to say a victim. I don't want to use that word. I am the subject of people training. Okay. And I have finally begun to realize that I am a subject of people training, and that the world that I've created around me is a result of what I believed about myself. And what I believed about myself was what I was taught to believe, not the truth of who I am, but what I was taught to believe. And go, oh, well, now I am being offered the choice that I can begin to believe differently. As A Course in Miracles put it, choose once again, or choose differently. Leo Biscaglia once said, if you don't like the scene, get the hell off the stage. Or put it in more metaphysical language, okay? If you don't like the scene, create another one, right? Because you created the one you didn't like. Oh. Now that doesn't mean all of our feelings about that disappear. Whenever I change the scene or change the scenery, I'm probably going to have to grieve a little bit.
Yes.
I'm going to have to grieve letting go of what no longer serves me. Because if it did serve me for a while, which it usually did for a while, then, you know, it became part of my shtick, became part of my existence. And if I choose to let go of it, that's wonderful and that's fine. But what the book stresses is, I don't just say, oh, I'm going to let go of that. Sometimes I need to dismantle a sense of belief of something that was important to me for a long period of time. I need to grieve that loss. That's part of the process. It doesn't just disappear.
Thank you, Jerry. The last thing with, you know, that remembers speaking to a therapist. So the going down that rabbit hole in terms of dismantling. The scary thing for me, just using me as an example, is once I'm dismantling, peeling back, unpacking, then those who I've attached importance to, value to, will understand me, will know me. So therefore, hence, I'll be alone. And I don't want to be alone.
That is a fear. That is a fear. And yet on the positive end, those who really, quote, know me or accept me for who I am will also be able to be open to whatever changes I might be manifesting in my life. What I was reminded of when you first talked about that, Jim, is let's suppose, and I did a lot of work in this particular area years ago. Let's suppose that you, let's suppose that you joined an organization like Al-Anon because it was an alcoholic in your life, and you started making some changes in yourself that were very necessary. But all the people around you were untreated. Mm. Mm-hmm. And they started seeing you making all of these changes, sort of separating yourself from this and separating yourself from that and letting go of blame and guilt and shame and letting go of rescuing and all the other stuff that might have been connected with your dysfunctional behaviors. That's going to make all of those other people who are not changing or not accepting their own addictions really, really uncomfortable. And they're going to want you to, well, why can't you be like you were last week? Why can't you be like you were last year? Why can't you get back with the program that you were a part of, you know, 6 months ago or a year? You say, toothpaste out of the tube. Okay. The raincoat's out of the little plastic envelope. Okay. You can't get it back in anymore. But they're still probably going to be reacting out of a sense of, I wish you were back to where you were. Kind of like what Jim was saying to you, I'm going to call you James. I'm not even going to wish you were back where you were. I'm going to pretend you were back where you were. Okay. And that's the level of acceptance. And I say, okay, that's fine. You can do that if you want, because I can't change your mind about that. I think I told you guys about this before. One of my most beautiful examples of that whole system is about a year or so ago, my grandson, who was 13, started calling me Jerry instead of Grandpa Jerry. And at first I was rather insulted. And I thought he wasn't with the program. He wasn't carrying the ball. He wasn't treating me with the honor and respect that the elder in this family. But what I realized was, by calling me Jerry, which he still does, by the way, and now it's just common sense, he was changing the parameters of the relationship. Saying, I am not going to look at you as being my grandpa out there someplace. I'm going to look at you as an equal, as a friend of mine. And that's how I'm going to talk to you. Now, he didn't say that out loud. That just kind of came to me when I sat with him. I said, oh, isn't that interesting? Am I willing to let go of that label in order to be able to connect with or align myself with a deeper truth? That was my question, which I in turn answered. I would much rather have you hold me as a friend than just to kind of stick a label on my forehead and say, this is the way I'm supposed to treat you. This is what I'm supposed to call you. I'm going to call you what I want to call you, but I'm going to align you and align our relationship to a deeper truth than one that you might have been involved in before. That was big. You know,
Jerry.
Yes.
The only truth I really feel like that I know for sure is that I am a child of God. That is my identity. I'm not defined by anything else in my heart. Maybe by other people, but it's not about them. It's about me.
Right. It's not about the personal me anymore. Because when I say I am a divine child of God, I'm not talking about my ego consciousness. I'm not talking about my person. Now, I bring that along for the ride. When I say I am a child of God, really what I'm saying is I am an aspect of the I amness. Mm-hmm. I'm an expression of divine truth. I am. Mm-hmm. Might be a good time for meditation. So I'm going to put you guys on mute. And suggestion is just allow yourself to get comfortable where you are. And close your eyes if you like, take a couple of breaths. Kind of let that whole front of your body, let that soften. Your abdomen, chest area, your heart, physical heart, your emotional heart, your spiritual heart. Just open to that. It's like walking into this huge spaciousness, sacred space. It is so full of grace, of light, of peace, of lovingness, that you can breathe it into your being. And as you breathe it in, you can experience yourself allowing it to touch every cell and fiber of your being, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. Nothing is left out. And you might be able to feel or sense or hear this sort of background energy of Om, or maybe even I am. Or you might even be able to notice how I am changes to Om. Get a sense of that resonance. That subtle, profound vibration. This is the truth of who I am. This is the truth of what the world is. I live in this truth. Is that which I live and move and have my being. I am. I am. And know that when you come back to your consciousness of being in a certain place or at a certain time, that you take this spaciousness, this expansiveness with you. In fact, you never left. You might have forgotten, but you never left. Breathe it in. Soak it in like a sponge. And if there is someone or someones in your life that you think or feel or sense are in separation or in pain, invite them to this space. Invite their spirit into this space. All those beings who are still suffering from separateness, who are struggling, I invite you all into the spaciousness of unconditional love, of unconditional truth. Accept it all. Allow yourself to be embraced by it all. And when you're ready to, you can stretch. Take a couple of deep breaths. I'm going to need to end a little bit early today because the young people in church are going to be putting on a celebration upstairs, and I know they need to get in this room to get some stuff. So I want to thank you all for being part of this, for yourselves, for each one of us. Know that there's nothing to lose. There's everything to gain. That it's all here. The peacefulness, the joy, even the grieving and the sorrow is all part of the picture. It's all real. It's all truth. It's all learning. Thank you all. Hope you have a wonderful, wonderful week. I'll see you next time. Okay. Take care,
thank
guys.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Jerry.
Everyone have a good week.
Thanks for being
love
here.
Love you all.
Love you too. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry.
You're always welcome.